harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe the fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. With lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. A actress who's been around quite a while, Rosanna Arquette, she's kind of long in the tooth. She has recently announced, "I'm sorry, I was born white and privileged. It disgusts me," she says. Hollywood actress Rosanna Arquette is apologizing for being born white, saying she's ashamed of the privilege she believes her skin brings. I'm sorry. I was born white and privileged. It disgusts me, and I feel so much shame. The Pulp Fiction actress said on Wednesday, and this was a tweet she put out. It's not exactly clear exactly why the award-winning actress, whose net worth is estimated at about $9 million, announced her shame for being white, but the crashing. Is certainly no stranger to outrageous statements. On Monday, Arquette posted a photo of herself kneeling in front of dozens of American flags. She captioned the tweet by saying, "I'll never stand for the flag again." When the whole nine yards star isn't denouncing her skin color in the American flag, she's bashing the country and President Donald Trump. In March, Arquette said President Donald Trump is perpetuating a sick dictatorship and running a government that has normalized racism, rape, mass killings from guns, pedophilia, homophobia, pedophilia. Donald Trump's fought against that. Rape? Incredible. Anyway, she followed up that missive with another, lambasting U.S. immigration and border enforcement. Quote, "Children are sick and dying inside the cruel concentration camps in the United States of America with no U, capital, or on the U or on the S. This will be the Trump administration's legacy. We're not dying in the cast. I mean, not dying because they're being starved or anything. Some of them are sick. They're irresponsible parents that bring them. Rosanna Arquette isn't the only blonde award-winning actress to wish she wasn't white. In 2016, actress Julie Delpy said she believes there's nothing worse than being a woman in Hollywood and wish you were black instead. Quote, 2 years ago I said something about the Academy being very white male, which is the reality, and I was slashed to pieces by the media, the Oscar-winning star told The Wrap. Quote, it's funny, women can't talk. I sometimes wish I were African-American because people don't bash them afterwards for talking. You've got to wonder about the mental state of Rosanna Arquette. David Duke had an interesting commentary on this, and he pointed out that Rosanna Arquette, for whatever it's worth, her mother was partly Jewish, and her father was originally a Catholic but converted to Islam. Yeah, make of that what you will, but perhaps when she says that she's ashamed of being white, that some could argue the point. I tweeted about this myself, and no, I'm not ashamed of being white. But what I said was this: that she's probably just a drama queen. She wants to get her name in the paper, so say something outrageous, or do something outrageous, or provocative. In addition, she's a poser. She's posing as a social justice warrior, filled with white guilt, and so on. Well, I'm sure there will be people who think, well, that's really good. Rosanna's okay. I look at it differently. If she's sincere, if she's not sincere, if this is just a pose to get some favorable nods in some quarters, then she's a hypocrite, and she's a phony. But if she is sincere, if this is what she really believes, and I can't fault anybody for something they believe. I agree with it, but okay, I put it this way. If she's sincere, if she really believes that, really, 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 she's ashamed, she's just disgusted at being white, okay, then do something about it, Rosanna. I can appreciate you being disgusted, then do something about it. Like, well, I would suggest she's apparently worth at least $9 million. Why not take how many people have $1 million? Well, not very many, but okay, we'll let her have $1 million. So take 8 of those $9 million and write a big old check. You're ashamed of being white. Well, why don't you do something for the non-white people? And I would suggest you take that check and write it payable to the government of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Right. Yeah, you're really saving the world there, Rosanna. And if you did that, you can be pretty sure that whatever had been saved, whatever went there, would be duly pissed away in a few weeks' time. Now, I think these people have got to be challenged. You can't have it both ways. If she's just saying this to get her name in the paper, okay, then she's a fraud, and should be treated the way you treat a bad elementary school child who's constantly doing things for attention. You give them a good spanking. Or the alternative is she thinks she's sincere. She's not doing it for attention. This is what she says. She says, I believe it. Then say, prove it. I don't think we're tough enough with these people. Yeah, you know, she delivers herself of these outrageous statements. She's ashamed of being white, but then, by all means, why don't you go and live in Haiti? You know, you're ashamed of being white. Go and live with the Negroes. You don't like America. You don't like Trump. You don't like being white. Well, go and live with other people, the people you, I guess, presumably would like to be like. Like, you know, so many of the Hollyweird people or entertainers, when it looked as though Donald Trump might actually have a chance of winning, boldly announced that if he won, they'd leave the country. Rosie O'Grady claimed she'd leave the country. Miley Cyrus, when she wasn't twerking her little bottom, said she'd leave the country. Well, to the very best of my knowledge, both of them, including a whole lot of others who also made similar dire threats, are still here. I want to thank a good friend of mine in Vancouver for sending this my way. This is about what has happened in Iceland. The Parliament of Iceland passed a piece of legislation earlier this year outlawing a long circumcision, male circumcision. They'd already outlawed female circumcision, which is a far more serious and traumatic procedure. But anyway, this legislation outlawed male circumcision. Well, immediately there was an incredible amount of pressure brought to bear on tiny Iceland by world Jewry. And even though there are very few Jews in Iceland, this just goes to show the outrageous long reach of the Jewish lobby. And in the end, Iceland is back down. So I was sent these kind of trail of tweets that kind of nicely explains the case. So I'll go through these with you. My friend says, let's look at how global Jewry exerts pressure on Western countries to advance Jewish interests. To illustrate this, we're going to take a look at Iceland. Now, on February the 2nd, February 1st of this year, Iceland's parliament introduced a bill to outlaw circumcising children younger than 18 years of age. The bill was sponsored by 8 of Iceland's 63 parliament members, who spanned 5 different political parties, which represented 48% of Iceland's parliamentary seats. That is the parties too. Within 48 hours, 422 doctors, that's 25% of all the doctors in Iceland, and 1,325 nurses signed a declaration supporting the bill. This wasn't surprising since Iceland already outlawed female circumcision back in 2005, and only 21 male children have been circumcised in Iceland since. The relatively small number of circumcisions performed is due to the fact that of the 340,000 people living in Iceland, there are only 35 Jews and less than 1,000 Muslims. For both religions, circumcision is a religious rite, but it is obligatory and central to Judaism. And then there's some discussion online of the various some various personalities, but we'll get back to the the case. One commentator says, mutilation. It would be far better if they circumcised their hearts and they were no longer stubborn as commanded in Deuteronomy. And so there began to be very considerable world Jewish pressure on Iceland. I'm trying to pick up the rest of the thread here. In the end, though, they backed down. There were, of course, strong threats that this was a that the act was anti-Semitic. And it's nothing of the sort. It would affect anybody who wished to circumcise their child. Now, I don't take a strong position on this, but I think nonetheless it's a tribute to the tremendous power that this group of people has over politics, and not just politics in the United States. Here's a kind of a parallel story. Petition for Danish circumcision ban loses political support. The wording of a petition for a minimum age on circumcision has resulted in a loss of support from politicians. This is in Denmark. The petition to ban circumcision of children, forwarded by a lobby group called Intact Denmark, in June reached the 50,000 signature level required to force in order to force Parliament to take up the issue. While many politicians previously supported the implementation of an age limit on circumcision, they are now withdrawing their support. This is due to key elements of the proposal, according to the Danish paper Kristeligt Dagblad. Intact Denmark is a lobby group which aims to stop genital mutilation of all children worldwide, regardless of cultural affiliation or religion of their parents, according to the organization's website. Intact claims that Denmark has neglected to comply with international regulations by allowing male circumcision. The petition states, among other things, that a gender-neutral age of 18 for circumcision will ensure implementation of some previously agreed-upon international covenants. And, that does make sense. Within certain limits, a person is entitled to do with their body as they wish. You know, if you want to put a big plug in your earlobe and look like a tribal, well, I think if you're over 18, you've got the right to do it. You've got the right to be crazy. But circumcision, the cutting of the foreskin of a little boy's penis, would seem to be a outright assault. I mean, if you were to take a pair of garden shears or pruning shears and snip off the tip of the little baby's let's say middle finger, this would be considered assault and wounding. I know there are other points of view about circumcision, but it would seem to be fair and make sense that if an adult, somebody 18 years of age or over, wishes to have it done to themselves, that's their choice. Anyway, by supporting the proposal, the Danish politicians can ensure that Denmark lives up to the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. However, the argument that Denmark is not in compliance with the convention is inaccurate, according to a number of prior written submissions of Denmark's Ministry of Health. There's been some slacking off of the support. Nonetheless, I find all of this very, very interesting. Of course, any time there is a shooting involving somebody who might rightly or wrongly be identified as a white nationalist, there's hell to pay. And once again, there's all sorts of calls for repression, and indeed actual repression. And so it's perhaps not surprising that it wasn't long in coming. Cloudflare chief explains decision to ban numeral 8 or 8chan. And this is a rather interesting article. Once again, shows that that Silicon Valley, the Silicon Valley censors are not our friend. And I want to kind of suggest a conclusion before I even get into the substance, and that is that we must put the word out that when times change, and they will change, that we will not forget the censors at Twitter and Facebook and PayPal and all these other outfits that are so tempted to limit free speech and to attack people on the basis of their political views. Sincerely held biblical view, conservative biblical views, anti-Zionism, white nationalism, national socialism, and a whole lot of other views that have been suppressed. Early Monday, 8chan, the anonymous message board where the man accused of carrying out the El Paso shooting, Patrick Crucius, posted his manifesto, went offline. It wasn't 8chan's doing that he published his manifesto. It's simply a platform. And the manifesto is now widely available on the internet, and should be. People should have the right to be able to look at what he said, what his reasons were as he saw it for what he did. That doesn't mean one agrees with them. I understand a lot of the reasons he gave, the replacement of the European people of Texas with large numbers of Mexicans, the shipping of jobs overseas, the poor employment opportunities for young people and young whites in particular, and so on. There's a lot of sense in his manifesto. It's not, as CNN would have us believe, a racist screed. I'm not sure they even know what that word means, but it's often used for any piece of writing the critic doesn't like. I don't agree with him. The shooting up in Walmart full of Mexicans, and maybe others, is the right way to do it, to go about this. But I would like, and I think others would like, the ability to be able to read what the guy has to say, rather than relying on the pathologically biased talking heads at CNN. Anyway, back to the story. 8chan is down. The man responsible for the outrage wasn't Jim Watkins, 8chan's owner, or his son Ronald, the message board's administrator. Instead, the decision to take 8chan offline, at least temporarily, fell largely to Matthew Prince, chief executive of a little-known San Francisco company called Cloudflare. Cloudflare provides tools that protect websites from cyber attacks. And allows sites to load content more quickly. It's a critical tool for sites like 8chan, where extremists gather, or people of various points of view gather. Without the kind of protection that Cloudflare offers, 8chan can be barraged by automated, hard-to-prevent attacks from its critics, making it nearly impossible to stay online. With a cyber attack, it's possible to bring the site down or to freeze it. And this has happened several times my two sites, the free speech site for the Canadian Association for Free Expression, which is, if you're interested, I'd like to take a look at it, http://cafe.nfshost.com. So cafe.nfshost.com. That's the free speech site, the immigration reform site, the site for the Canadian, so the Canada First Immigration Reform Committee is canadafirst.nfshost.com.
www.sshost.com. And we've been under attack from time to time too. Anyway, back to the story about how Cloudflare has kicked 8chan off, gotten rid of it. Prince has become an unlikely focal point for critics of 8chan and other parts of the internet. Cloudflare's service protects a large chunk of the internet, and for years, the decade-old company avoided making decisions about which sites deserve protection and which did not. That changed in 2017, after white nationalists held a rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, which turned violent. After the rally, Prince was pressured to remove the Daily Stormer. I won't read the editorializing by the writer Kevin Roops, but it was a lively, satirical white nationalist site, and it still is. But it was removed. He eventually agreed to do so. It was a break from the company's content-neutral stance, and Prince expressed reservations about his choice. I woke up in a bad mood and decided someone shouldn't be allowed on the internet, he said. And he even admitted that no one should have that power. In a telephone conversation on Monday afternoon, Prince sounded torn. On one hand, 8chan was clearly reprehensible and depriving it of the protection of Cloudflare, the Cloudflare provides, would rid him of a troublesome customer and a huge headache. On the other hand, banning 8chan could set a bad precedent and would make it harder for law enforcement authorities to monitor extremists. I guess they do that through the back door of 8chan, Cloudflare.
What I think is important is that we really put that word out there, that we will remember, and that these giants who so abused our right to free speech and limited it will be punished. One way would be to break them up as monopolies, to insist that there be competition. Many of these are virtual monopolies. So of course, what happens if you get banned from them? You are made somewhat into a non-person. Luckily, there is competition growing. Like the competition to Facebook competition to Facebook would be VT from. Which is out of Russia, the alternative to Facebook is Gab, GAB.AI. The alternative to YouTube is, among others, BitChute. But these are still relatively small. So we have to make it clear that we will not forget, and that those who have persecuted freedom of speech can expect themselves to be punished. Breaking these up, these monopolies would be one thing, or in some jurisdictions, perhaps costly civil suits by people who've been victimized. And when times change, I think this will happen too. Now, Donald Trump has on a number of occasions indicated that he is concerned about the way Silicon Valley has deplatformed conservatives, censored them, kicked them off, and so on. And I think that this is something that we've got to work with, that Donald Trump might well be amenable to pushing for legislation that will break up these tyrants. I think that this is very definitely one way to go. I've been talking about this freak story up in Canada about this transgendered thingy, original name Jonathan Yaniv, Y-A-N-I-V, and Jonathan Yaniv a couple of years ago decided that Jonathan wanted to become Jessica. Now Jonathan still has a penis, although he claims he's lining up for to have that chopped off. I don't want to be too vulgar, but I mean, at times you just want to laugh. He got a lot of people into trouble, a lot of aestheticians into trouble. Most of these are foreign women, Brazilians, some Vietnamese, and Sikhs, and so on. And they provide services or beautification services on the human body, one of which is is depilation or the removal of hair, and particularly women's pubic hair, in a procedure called the Brazilian wax. Okay. Well, last autumn, Jonathan Yaniv called up on about 20 Vancouver area estheticians and asked to be if they would provide a Brazilian wax job, and he said he was a female, and they agreed. And then he added, well, but I still have a penis. And well, three apparently agreed. They said, well, whatever, come on over. The others disagreed and said that they couldn't do it, and he has since harassed them with complaints to the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal, where he is claiming that he has been discriminated against on the basis of his gender identification. He's got the equipment of a male, looks more or less like a male, but feels like a woman. And now one woman shut down her business. She didn't need the aggravation and the pressure. Another woman settled for $2,500 out of before the tribunal. But these cases are now winding their way through the BC Human Rights Tribunal. And the case has garnered international attention. Canada's become the laughing stock of comedians in Britain, the United States, and as far away as Australia. I mean, the absolute nonsense of this, the result would be that a woman esthetician would be required to shave and administer to the testicles and penis of a man who pretends to be a woman, or thinks he's a woman. I won't say pretend, thinks he's a woman, or identifies as a woman. This is compulsion. Either that or go out of business, or either that, or say, well, we just don't do Brazilian waxes of either sex. This is the tyranny, and we warned about this with human rights legislation that gives special rights to the freaks. Well, anyway, he's back in the news again. Busted for a taser, transgender activist says. Jessica Yaniv, which was originally Jonathan Yaniv, a transgendered BC person whose complaints over being refused intimate waxing services sparked wide controversy, was arrested on Monday, apparently for brandishing a prohibited weapon during an online debate. He was in an online debate with a transgender person. This person is Blair White. And Blair White is a prominent U.S. transgendered person who has a show on YouTube.
And on this YouTube debate or discussion with, I don't know what he was originally, but now he calls himself Blair White. Jonathan Yaniv, who calls himself Jessica, brandished a taser. And the story got even more interesting from there. there's a lot of the RCMP confirmed that there had been an arrest, but they're not naming names, and the usual police, lack of transparency. Anyway, neighbors saw Yaniv being taken away in handcuffs. and on Monday, Yaniv did appear in a side-by-side YouTube conversation with Blair White, a U.S.-based transgender person whose videos often deal with transgender issues. During the heated YouTube debate viewed by the National Post, White harshly criticized Yaniv's tactics, actions, and appearance, and Yaniv said she faces harassment and threats because of the prominence of her trans activism. Well, you make yourself a frequently seen face in the papers. Yeah, people are going to notice you. Well, of course, now she's afraid that all these social justice warriors just love to go into the "I'm so vulnerable, I'm so afraid" act. Anyway, quote, "I have to carry pepper spray with me because people are so freaking violent over here." She's never been assaulted, though. But she then stood up, and this is on the YouTube video, from her seat in front of her computer, rummaged around inside her apartment for a moment before returning. "I should not have to literally have something like this," she said. "I don't need to be scared in my own house." She then held up a stun gun and zapped it toward the camera, emitting a flash and crackling noise. So this is a taser. And she even admitted, which is illegal in Canada. And these weapons, they call them conducted energy weapons, or stun guns, and one of the company or corporate names is Taser. She had that, as well as pepper spray, and the pepper spray is considered against the law in Canada. She said officers took two stun guns, pepper spray, and bear spray from her apartment, or his apartment. We are in a kingdom of confusion. Yaniv, however, said the charge is unfair, because apparently on previous dealings with the police, she had warned them that she has these pepper spray and bear spray and tasers, and according to her, the police were, quote, cool with this. Well, we'll see. Here's a story about yet another pushy group of people. Council of Canadian Muslims demand Conservative Christian Member of Parliament candidate resign. The National Council of Canadian Muslims is calling on Toronto area Conservative candidate to step aside following reports about her past social media posts. Nadia Hassan, acting executive director of the council, said Saturday that Ghada Melek, she's an Egyptian Coptic Christian, she's running for the Conservatives in Mississauga, Streetsville. That's close to where I used to live. Anyway, her alleged comments on Islam and the LGBTQ2 community show she wouldn't know how to serve all citizens in a very diverse riding. Well, that's their opinion. If they don't like her, vote against her. Since when do ethnocentric, this is actually Brad Salzberg's commentary, and I agree with him on this, since when do ethnocentric taxpayer-funded multicultural groups care about all Canadians? This organization, like many others, is concerned about a single segment of society, Islamic Canada. The rest of it, such as
the Jews, for that matter, Christians are simply a matter of optics. If the myopic Middle Eastern folks can convince the general public they have concerns other than Islam, they will be that much more successful in their singular agenda: to advance, fund, indemnify, and integrate the Nation of Islam into the Nation of Canada. And pushy they are. Why on earth is this organization wielding so much power within Canadian society? Why are these people to push around Christians, demand political resignations, and brand Anglophones as bigots? Was it not until the advent of King Justin Trudeau that Islam accumulated sufficient power to control Canada and its citizens? General Canadian society owes the National Council of Canadian Muslims nothing. We are not obligated to conform to their wishes, nor should this anti-Christian witch hunt organization have an ability to lord it over individual citizens who conform to Canadian law, not Sharia law. According to the National Post, Ms. Mellick appeared to have retweeted a post that blamed Detroit's economic hell on Islamist extremism in 2013. In a Vice article, Mellick was accused of backing an expert who supported LGBTQ2 conversion therapy. Well, so what? That's her opinion. You may disagree with her. Yeah. You may agree with her. If you disagree with her strongly enough, well, if you live in the riding she'll be contesting, don't vote for her. Why would the Conservative Party be urged to take her out as a candidate? Why not? She should have the right to put those ideas forward, and the community should have a right to vote for her or not for her as they see fit. Racist, homophobic, asks Brad Salzberg. Not a chance. Neither of these statements violate the Canadian Criminal Code or fall under the category of hate speech. Yet, according to the National Council of Canadian Muslims, Mellick is a racist and should be fired. Bollocks. These people can whine all they like, but the fact is that there are no legal grounds for the MP to be dropped. Well, this is Paul from you on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again in a we'll back with you to close off in a few minutes. We're going to play something a bit light tonight. Now, this is a man who really brought the Bakersfield sound to Nashville, to Bakersfield, of course, from the agricultural area in Central California. Buck Owens and his Buckaroos was a great favorite on the old Hee Haw radio show, TV show. This is Buck Owens and the Buckaroos.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna live here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before.
Love's gonna live here again. Right lights are filmed. There ain't no way to slow you down.
dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a come through, and my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees, and just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a together again, my tears have stopped falling. The long, lonely nights are now at an end. The key to my heart you hold in your hand, and nothing else matters. We're together again. Again, the gray skies are gone. You're back in my arms. Now where you belong, the love that I knew is with you again, and nothing else matters. We're together again, and nothing else matters. We're together again. Thank you.
Paul Prom, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. Show's repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. Back with you again tomorrow.